What is up, guys? Welcome to Social Bamboo Podcast, teaching only the fastest and most sustainable social media growth strategies out there. I'm your host, Derek Vidal, and on today's episode, I am interviewing Nate Schmidt. Nate is a guy that I've been following on YouTube for a few years now, really since I started in e-commerce. He was one of the first people that I found that I just really felt like he knew what he was doing. And I think you're really going to see that too from this interview here. Had questions for him all the way from starting an e-commerce business to running ads nowadays with Apple's new iOS updates and a lot of good stuff. So if you're in e-commerce in any capacity, you're looking to get started with it, maybe you're an artist that wants to sell more prints online, or you're an influencer that wants to start selling merch. There's so many different ways you can get in e-commerce. This is going to be a great episode for you. I will let you know there was kind of a lag between our signal, so there's a little bit of dry space in between when he ends his talking and I start mine, or you know, vice versa. So just, you know, ignore that as best as you can, but there's just a couple second delay in the audio, so you might hear that a little bit. Otherwise, I mean, it should be good stuff. If you got any questions, just reach out to Nate or I on Instagram, and hope you enjoy the interview. Schmidt of Blue Ocean e-commerce. I mean, this guy's got a bunch of companies at this point. I'm not sure which one I should attribute to you the most. I'll give you a second to introduce yourself more formally. But I've been following Nate for a couple years now on YouTube. I've been on his email list, and this is the first guy I've had to use the word unsubscribable, because I seriously read to the end of all the emails, and they certainly have closed me on some courses in the past. So really great, unique perspective. And I've been watching him run multiple different e-commerce stores and helping other people get some serious numbers in the business. So yeah, we're going to explore everything current in e-commerce today. But Nate, how's it going, man?
Dude, it's going great, man. It's going great. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
So give them a little bit of an origin story, like, you know, shrunk down to a couple minutes, just who you are, how you got started, and what you're doing now.
Yeah, man, I can do that for sure. So, excuse me. So my name is Nate Schmidt. I'm 24 years old now. I'm from North Carolina. That's where I currently live. About, I guess it was probably 4 years ago now, 3 years ago, about 3.5 years ago now. I dropped out of college to pursue online business. I was in school for marketing, and I just realized that if I kept on with that path, that I was going to have to get a job. I was going to have to work for someone, and that was just not something that I wanted to do. I was very, just very independent growing up. I didn't really like listening to other people. I didn't like authority. So I realized I had to figure something out. There's a lot more that goes into that story, but we'll leave it at that for now. Maybe we can get more into it later. And then I basically found just the entire world of online business, of online marketing, of, you know, of copywriting, of freelancing, drop shipping, e-commerce, found all these things and spent like probably like 6 months just completely diving super deep into these things when I was still in school, learned a lot. And then I ended up getting, the way that I started out with making, you know, quote unquote, making money online was doing freelance copywriting. So basically it was really simple what I was doing. I was writing emails, like marketing emails for companies. Most of these companies were in like the health or like fitness, nutrition, supplements type niche. I would write emails to their email list of their existing customers, just trying to sell more of their products, and was able to make a couple grand a month doing that. And then from there, I kind of transitioned into drop shipping and went super down that rabbit hole. I built a bunch of stores and like none of them worked. And then, the first store I built that actually made a sale, the same day that I made my first sale, I told my parents that I wanted to take a semester off school, you know, and see what I could do with it. And that was basically my way of saying, like, hey, I'm dropping out of college, but I had to figure out a decent way to say it so that they would actually get on board with it. So dropped out of school, and then I basically had, like, that whole semester to figure out how to make enough money to support myself. And somehow I was able to do that through a combination of doing freelance copywriting. I built, you know, multiple e-commerce stores, and then one finally eventually worked. was able to make some money through that. And then, you know, within a couple months, I really just like had completely changed my life. I went from like so broke that I literally had to like check my bank account before I went to McDonald's to make sure that I had enough in my checking account to order like, you know, a number three, whatever it was. And went from that to making, you know, 10 grand plus a month in profit. And that's kind of how I got started. So that was like three and a half years ago. Ended up doing some cool stuff after that. You know, I planned on traveling the world and then started traveling the world. And it wasn't nearly all it was cracked up to be. Like I thought it was this idea in my head that that's what I was going to do when I got all this freedom. And then I kind of realized that I actually really just wanted to work on my business. And traveling was like something that kind of got in the way of that. And then from there, I've just, you know, built that first store that started working. And that was early 2018, was able to bring that to $1.5 million in revenue in the first year, which was absolutely nuts. Like that was just the absolute craziest thing to me at the time. And from there, I've just kind of kept on going with e-commerce. I have, this business Blue Ocean e-commerce, which is not actual, I guess it's not like my actual e-commerce business. That's a separate business. But Blue Ocean e-commerce is where, you know, I kind of teach people how to do these types of things, how to drop out of school and make a full-time living doing doing e-com. And so I do that. And then me and my partner, Scotty, we run our own brands. That's kind of like my main e-com thing. And yeah, that's the basic gist about me in terms of like business. I guess besides that, I'm real into golf. Got really into that about a year and a half ago. And I love skiing. Still, despite what I said a second ago, I do love traveling. Just not like perpetually. I guess those are some of the main things.
I think everyone, so many people get into entrepreneurship for the sake of I'll be able to travel freely, right? So it's kind of funny that you got to that point and then you turned out, you know, that's not what you want to do all the time, just like the more occasional vacation, not like a permanent traveler. Like it sounds like Scotty is.
Yeah.
Is Scotty the permanent traveler?
I wouldn't really say so. He's much more of like, he likes to travel, but he likes to live in places. So he'll like live somewhere for 3 months. Whereas I'm more of like, I live at home and then I'll go travel for 2 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever. And then come back home. Whereas he'll just live somewhere for 3 months, live somewhere else for 3 months. That's kind of his modus operandi, I suppose.
Just having the option is what it's all about, I guess. But Scotty's an awesome business partner.
And that was the biggest thing for me is like I always wanted that option, and that was like one of the big things that really pushed me to do, you know, what I do now, is I wanted that ability, that freedom to be able to travel and to be able to spend my time how I wanted to. And then kind of how it happened was, I flew to New Zealand. I booked a flight like 2 days before. And I was just like, where should I go? And I was just like, well, New Zealand seems pretty cool. Like, I don't know any other languages. I don't want to go somewhere completely by myself to a place where I don't speak the language. Like, that just didn't seem that appealing to me. So I picked New Zealand. I flew to New Zealand, stayed there for about 2 weeks. My original plan was to get to Queenstown, which is in kind of like the south part of New Zealand, buy a motorcycle, and then travel my way up through New Zealand by motorcycle. And, spend like 6 to 9 months there. And I ended up getting there, and it was, I didn't check the weather. I didn't think about like the whole differences in the hemispheres. It was like May, I think, when I flew there. And I got there, and it was just super cold and raining every day. Like, it was just the beginning of winter, and it was just like miserable. And I was like, well, I'm definitely not going to be traveling in this by motorcycle. So I ended up staying there for like two and a half weeks, and then I ended up flying home. And that was kind of like my initial experience with thinking I wanted to be a world traveler, and then realizing like, I do want to travel, but I don't think I want to do this like full time.
But if you never close that door, then it would always just be like egging you on to like go test it out.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I'm glad I did it. Like I feel like with some things for me personally, I just have to learn things the hard way.
Yeah.
And that was definitely something to learn the hard way. And, you know, I mean, it wasn't like that hard or anything, but it was a good lesson. It taught me more about myself, and I had a good time. No regrets.
I'm very similar. Like even when you said before, like I don't respond well to authority. I mean, that's how I've always said it as well. So definitely a lot of similarities. Something I've been curious about traveling the world on is how much it will help me gain a perspective on being a better marketer, since we do sell internationally. Is that something that you really found, like you got a taste of cultures on how to sell to different countries better from your travels?
I don't know how specifically it translates to, like, you know, the actual specific marketing that you do, but I think that experiencing different cultures, going to different places and seeing how different types of people live is just good for your own development as a person. It makes you a more well-rounded person. And I think those experiences can definitely help you, you know, become a better marketer. I just don't know if it's like super directly like that.
Okay. Interesting. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I was like, I don't know. I think I was just trying to justify every reason to buy a plane ticket at that point. yeah. All right. So something I want to get into, I mean, you're always good at, you've got great focus on the micro tasks per day, but you also have a really good understanding of just like the macroscopic landscape of how e-commerce is changing and how to approach the opportunities when they're hot and kind of knowing when, you know, you got a lot of videos online about drop shipping is dead and such like that. So it's not Amazon FBA anymore. It's not traditional drop shipping. How would you define how people can really get into e-commerce nowadays?
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host, Matt Heslin, brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
Yeah, so I think like the whole, you know, that whole thing of like dropshipping is dead, like that's a, you know, that's a marketing term that people use to get views. You know, I'm not excluded from that. I've definitely used that before. The way that I see it is like dropshipping in terms of doing that as a long-term sustainable business, I think that's dead and I think has been dead for a long time. When you don't have any control over your supply chain, when you're shipping from China and you just don't have that control, it's going to be very difficult to build a business that actually satisfies its customers. And when your business doesn't satisfy customers, it's not going to be a long-term business. Like most dropshipping for most people is a 3 to 6 to 9 month venture where they have something and they make some money in the short term and then it dries up and then, you know, they got to move on to the next thing. The way that I see it is dropshipping is a really great way for you to validate ideas. Dropshipping from AliExpress or dropshipping with a dropshipping agent. It's a great way to validate your ideas with very low risk and for very low upfront costs. It's a way for you to figure out, okay, like if I have an idea, if this product, do I think this will sell? Well, you don't have to think. You can go test it. You can throw up a store on Shopify. You can fulfill via AliExpress. And your customers are certainly not going to be the happiest. But the entire idea is that you validate your idea at a low level of scale so that you can then build the business the correct way and then bring that to a high level of scale. So kind of the way that we do things is we start off, if we have an idea for a new product or a new store that we want to test out and see if it'll work. You know, we'll build out the store. We'll start testing it, fulfilling from AliExpress, just like, you know, typical dropshipping. That's the, you know, for anyone who's not familiar with dropshipping, that's the kind of like typical dropshipping website that you, you know, fulfill your orders from. And we'll test the products for a couple days to a week from AliExpress. If the results are good there, then we will transition to using a dropshipping agent. And with that dropshipping agent, we'll scale to, you know, maybe like 10 to 20 orders a day or so, nothing like too crazy. You know, a dropshipping agent is just someone who essentially is able to buy your products in bulk to some extent up front and then ship your orders out a lot quicker than an AliExpress supplier. So, you know, they're going to be able to provide a little bit better service. The orders are going to tend to get a little bit faster. So it's a little bit more sustainable way of doing things. And then once we've been doing that for a couple of weeks to a month and it's, you know, showing no signs of slowing down, it's showing a lot of promise, it's working, it's profitable, then we'll place a bulk order with a factory in China. We'll ship all that inventory over to a 3PL, a third-party logistics or fulfillment center. Those terms are kind of interchangeable. We'll ship, you know, a bulk order to the U.S. And then from there, that's kind of like the foundation of starting a real long-term brand that's actually has the potential to have some sort of staying power.
What's the fulfillment center you use in the U.S.?
So we've used a few. I'm not super comfortable giving out the name of the specific fulfillment center that we use right now, because it's not like it's not a big operation. It's not like a big, you know, like name brand company like ShipBob or I don't know, some of the other ones out there. But we definitely, I mean, there's so many of them we've used. We used to use one called, I think it was called Yodel, J-O-D-E-L, Yodel. They're located in Wisconsin. We used to use them for a while. I've talked to some guys at a company called Ship Daddy, which I haven't personally used them, but they were really cool dudes. And there's a lot of them out there. Like, you just gotta do some research and find them when you're at that stage and that's what you're looking for.
Is that usually what people have to go to nowadays, is finding a smaller supplier, because the big ones are maybe not the best rates? Is this on the logistics side usually where you end up?
Yeah, I mean, not in terms of factories, but in terms of fulfillment from the U.S. In our experience, a lot of the bigger companies, they do tend to charge a lot higher rates, and there's upsides and downsides to that, because they also have capabilities to do more advanced things in terms of like inventory tracking, analytics, and things like that, more so than smaller companies. But we've just found that working with kind of more like boutique fulfillment centers, that's just tended to work out a little bit better for us. So that's what we've been doing.
Okay. Yeah, I think with all my e-commerce endeavors that I've done, and like you, a lot of them, you know, you just pulled the plug on them quickly. With your Cole method, I'm good to talk about your Cole method briefly, right? So I don't know where the line gets drawn, because I have all of Nate's courses, but so customer offer, angle, and logistics. Once you get the four of those to match up, then that is where, you know, your essential, like the basis of your, you know, e-commerce store is, right? Getting those four things set. And the one that I've had the most trouble with is the logistics. I've found a lot of products that I feel like, the customer, I've got it down, the offer, the angle, got all that situated. But then I order like 8 samples, and recently on one of them, like all 8 samples were like all shit, like none of them worked. And and then like the next tier up of products was, you know, 50, 60 bucks a unit, and we only thought we could sell them for like $100. So like a lot of my ideas have been invalidated from the logistics side. Are there websites that you really recommend that people look for to, or other ways that you cut costs to get around this?
In terms of like ways to kind of reduce product expenses?
Yeah, or I guess I'm mostly looking for sourcing, like where you can source apart from where most people are sourcing from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think your best bet is probably going to be some sort of a sourcing agent in China. So there's companies whose, you know, their sole purpose is sourcing product in bulk, either in bulk, or there's sourcing agents and there's dropshipping agents. Some of them do both. Some of them do one or the other. It can either be, you know, individual units that they ship to your customers directly from China to the U.S., or it can be bulk orders that they ship to the U.S. to a fulfillment center that you then, you know, your fulfillment center then ships individually to your customers. So I would say that an agent is probably going to be your best bet, because if you're searching on Alibaba, you can probably, like, that's, you know, that's another way to do it. You can just source product from Alibaba if you're trying to order in bulk. You can find decent stuff on there. You're probably not going to get the best deals, because that's just kind of like the nature of things. When something's available to everyone, the prices, I think, tend to be a little bit higher. If you're dropshipping, I think a dropshipping agent is probably the best. Like the one that we always mention, his name is Honest Fulfillment. It's like F-U-L-P-H-I-L Fulfillment, like his name is Phil. Honest Fulfillment, I think they have a Facebook page or a Facebook group if you're looking for something like that you can contact them with. We've used them in the past and they've been really good. Usually you'll be able to get somewhat cheaper prices than you would on AliExpress, but you also have to be doing a little bit more volume. You can't just be, you know, being like, hey, I have 2 orders I need to fulfill. Like, you have to have like at least a couple orders a day, I think. I'm not really sure what their threshold is. But the way that we do things with sourcing is kind of it's kind of weird. Like, this isn't what I would recommend for someone that was just getting into it, but at the stage that we're at now, you know, we have a guy on our team full-time who's like our sourcing guy, who is Chinese, and he essentially works with all the factories directly. So he's able to find these factories, you know, ones that might not be as like big or common or easily as findable for someone who is just, you know, spoke English. And we just work directly with the factories. And, you know, that's kind of how we do things. That's how we've been able to reduce our costs, is by cutting out that sort of middleman with the agent or the sourcing company or anything like that. And then we just go direct to the factories and work with them like that.
So what kind of profit margin are you looking for on that first level of testing when you're just drop shipping it before the agent even comes into play? Are you looking for a product that you can sell for at least 2, 3, 4x the cost you're getting it for?
Yeah, so I'd say our minimum is like 3x. So if we're getting it for $10, we need to be able to sell it for at least 30. And I'd say that's kind of on the low end. The way that we kind of think about it is in terms of like gross margin percentage. So gross margin is just like the cost that you sell it at minus the cost that you got it for divided by the cost that you sold it for. So 30, if it's the same example, 30 minus 10 is 20 divided by 30. That's like a 67% or so gross profit margin if it's a 3x margin. So we look for that. Generally, we're looking for like as close to 70 or 80% as possible, just on the, you know, on the gross margin of the product. The higher the margins are, the easier it's going to be. Like, that's always how that works. So we're always trying to find products that we can sell with really high margins. So that's kind of what we're looking for there.
Is there a certain price point of the product that you try to stay between in order to sell on Facebook ads better?
I don't really think of it like in terms of specific price points. The way that it's pretty much worked out for me is that almost all the products that I've sold have ranged between, I would say, like $30 to $80 or so. Haven't really sold a whole lot of anything above or below that. That's not necessarily because it doesn't work or because I would be against it. Like, if there was something that made sense that was below or above that range, I would absolutely do it. That's just kind of how it's worked out.
It's a pain to have to buy a bulk order of things that are more expensive than that anyways.
It's more risky. It definitely is. And, you know, I've had experience with that, ordering a product that costs $20 in product cost versus $3. It's a lot riskier if you want to get a lot of units. So you got to be more sure that it's going to sell if you're ordering a lot of a more high-priced product, for sure.
So when you're in that testing phase, that first drop shipping phase, are you just spending a bunch on Facebook ads in order to get the results you want, or are you pursuing any other avenue?
Just Facebook ads, man. Just Facebook ads. The way that we do it is we usually just get the store up. We'll usually spend between $50 to $100 a day on ads when we're first initially testing a product. And we'll do that for 3 days or so to run the initial test. The way that I think of it is like each time that you run a set of ads and then make changes and then run another set of ads, like that's what I consider a round of tests. So for like a round of tests, it'll be about 3 days, around $150 to $200, $250, somewhere in that range of total ad spend. And then we'll see the results. We'll see what things are looking like. And if the results are good, we'll keep on that same route. If they're not good, then we make some really big changes. We try to improve what we're doing to try to get better results.
So these ads, you're running them directly to the Shopify store, right? Or are they going through a funnel?
No, directly. I mean, the way that we do things is super simple, man. It's directly from a, you know, Facebook ad to a very just kind of like, I don't want to say cookie cutter, but there's nothing special. There's no special softwares. There's no special, like, you know, funnels or anything, like any special pages that we use or anything. It's just like Facebook ad to a Shopify product page, and that's it.
And you try to keep these ads more on the line of like discount based when you're testing?
It depends. It really depends on the specific situation. The way that I kind of look at things is with everything that we're doing, if we're testing something, there's got to be at least one thing about what we're doing that at least I feel like is really strong. So it's kind of like back to those kind of key factors that we were talking about earlier with the Cole method, with creative, offer, angle, logistics. We have to have some sort of advantage, something that's really strong that other people don't have, or that is just going to be some sort of reason that this will work or is more likely to work than, you know, what everyone else is doing. So if the offer is that, you know, one really strong thing, then it could be, you know, very heavily based around a discount, or it could be something completely different. It could be, you know, the really strong thing is the angle. It's, you know, or maybe it's the specific market that we're targeting, or it's a combination of those things. You know, it can sometimes be more than one. But there's always, we're always trying to find something that is really strong, because without that, it's just not going to work. Like everyone who's trying to do e-com is just doing very average things. And if you're just doing very average things like everyone else is doing, you know, no one's going to care. No one's going to buy. You have to be doing something outstanding, something unique or different or better. And that's kind of the way that we go about that.
I think I might have misspoke before on the Colth. Is the C creative, did you say?
Yeah, the C is creative, and then offer, angle, and logistics.
And okay, then, and before. I'm not sure I got that.
When we fit into the, you know, into like the Cole mantra or whatever, is like another really important factor is your market. It's like who you're selling to. We usually call that like a specific hungry market. That can also be another thing where you can find a really strong advantage in, is by selling a product that is commonplace, that, you know, is not like super crazy or anything. But if you niche it down, you get very super specific in who you're targeting and the way that you're doing your marketing, then that can really speak to that type of person. And that can be the thing that makes them want to buy from you over, you know, all the other random Facebook ads that they see on a daily basis.
Let's talk a little bit more about that, actually, because I remember that was a big part about your course, is just like you have to be great at something, and it's usually the marketing, right? Because a lot of people are getting the same deals as you. They're looking at the same products. They've got the same Shopify store, and maybe your listing's a little bit better, but ultimately you got to get them to click in the first place. You got to get those impressions down, and that's with great creative and an angle and everything. And your offers are solid too. I know you really do get the whole package going. What would you say is like, where's the best place for people to start if they are not a good marketer? Do you have like a book that you recommend they go to, or even specific YouTube videos of yours? Where's like a good place where someone is like, I'm bad at sales, but I got a passion project, I just don't know how to sell it?
Yeah. So I would say like the core skill that kind of underpins all of this to me, and this is the skill that I learned that I really believe is like the number one thing that everyone should know if they want to, you know, do some sort of online business, is direct response marketing, which is a specific type of marketing, which is, it's kind of what it sounds like. It's direct response. It's not like, you know, with when you see a commercial on TV for Coke, they're like, you know, there's a polar bear and he's like drinking a Coke and he's feeling good. And it's like, you know, Coke, it's reminding you that it exists, but they're not like being like, hey, Coke is on sale right now. You can go down to this store, go to this address, get this deal. Direct response marketing is you're trying to elicit a response right now, right away. You're trying to show someone an ad and get them to make a purchase right away. If you have that skill, then everything else kind of takes care of itself. So I think that's kind of the number one focus, is like, I think my advice to most beginners would be like, just spend 6 months doing nothing but learning the skill of direct response marketing. If you do that, like, you're going to have such a strong foundation, and you're going to be so much more knowledgeable and so much better at marketing than all these other people who are just, you know, randomly throwing stuff up on Facebook. So in terms of like resources for that, really like just anything by guys like Dan Kennedy, Gary Halbert, John Carlton, Gary Bensavanga. Like, these are kind of like old school direct response marketers that a lot of their stuff kind of goes unnoticed, I think, in today's age, because they were, I mean, some of them are still alive. A lot of those guys are not alive anymore. But they were doing marketing in an age before the internet. They were writing physical sales letters, mailing them out to thousands of people's homes. And that's how, you know, that's how they would make money. And that was a lot harder than it is on the internet. So my thinking is, if you learn from these guys who were actually really, really skilled, I think I'm somewhat skilled at this thing. You know, I've been doing this for a couple of years, but these guys were doing this for decades in a much more difficult medium. Those are the guys that I think you should learn from. And all of it might not seem like it's like directly applicable to what you might be doing right now, because it's online and they're talking about direct mail and it seems very different. But ultimately, the principles are the same. And if you're a beginner, if you don't have that strong foundation, that strong foundational understanding of direct response marketing, all you need to focus on is the principles. And then from there, then you can go and you can figure out how you can apply those principles in specific tactical ways, specific strategical ways. But that would be probably like my number one thing that I would say for beginners is you need to learn the skill of direct response marketing. There's other guys like Ben Settle. That was a huge source resource for me. That's where I learned a lot of this stuff. That's how I learned about all these other guys that I just mentioned a second ago. And just like, besides that, just like do a lot of reading, from anything direct response marketing or copywriting related. Like figure out if you don't know what those things are, like research them, figure out what copywriting is. Copy, W-R-I-T-I-N-G, not like copyright, like the legal term. That's like kind of the main thing. That's really why I believe that I was able to be successful fairly quickly, is because I learned this foundational skill, which is like essentially the skill of being able to sell things. And if you have that skill, then you can translate that to literally anything. And that's like the thing that I think most people are missing.
I totally agree. I think a lot of people that are, maybe they're good at growing an Instagram following and building a website and all of those things, but they don't know the foundational skill of sales, and it just kind of stalls the entire business. I don't think you ever did direct sales, right? Like selling products directly to a consumer to their face.
No,
you're in pizza, right? Like when the first shipping store took off.
Yeah, I was working at a pizza place delivering pizza. That was my main gig. It was honestly at the time, it was a pretty good gig. Like I was making a lot more than my friends were, like just with all the tips and everything. The place I worked at was super busy, so we'd be getting a lot of tips. And I just drove around and basically for, you know, towards the end of it, when I was kind of getting into all this kind of stuff, I would just drive around and listen to podcasts, like marketing podcasts and, you know, things like that. And it was a good job.
I've got a similar story too, because I was listening to podcasts all the time when I was a traveling salesman, but I would just drive around and do sales. So that's where I learned direct response marketing, was selling stuff face to face. I was just going to say, I bet you would love that, and I'm sure you'd do great at it too. But it's just cool because you can say anything and then just watch what their face does. So you can just test lines all day. We just work like these busy home and garden shows. Someone comes up, you ruin the pitch. Cool, you're out of here. Next person comes up, you try to say random stuff to him, and it's just, it's kind of the same deal of direct response marketing, but right in front of your face. So yeah, it ultimately is learning sales skills before just trying to say, hey, I've got a product on sale, and thinking that's just going to be enough to make people buy it. So let's go into the technicals now. I think iOS 14 updates, it scares a lot of people from wanting to get started in ads. And I've run a couple ad campaigns since then. I've consulted on a few of them as well. And it does seem like it is kind of, you know, taking a hit to results here. Like, what are some of the workarounds, if you got some, or how have you responded to it?
Yeah, man. I mean, it's been an industry-wide thing. Like, it's no one's really escaping it. It's been annoying. For sure, it's not ideal. We're seeing a pretty significant decrease in, like, you know, our Facebook ads reporting versus like our actual sales versus what Facebook ads says, you know, the amount of sales that we made. I want to say that it's like right now, I think we're around like 60 or so percent, 70% is reporting, which is like not good at all. That makes it a lot more difficult to make decisions about what's working and what's not. But I mean, I don't really have any specific workarounds or anything. Like, to me, it's just, there are things that happen in the online marketing space like this all the time, like big changes. And admittedly, I think this is a pretty big one comparatively to a lot of things that have happened over the last couple of years. But things change. And, you know, from where I'm sitting, we're just going to keep chugging. Like, nothing's really going to change in what we do. We're going to adapt. We're going to figure out what we got to do to, you know, keep running our business. And I think if you have that attitude towards things, like you'll figure it out. If you know that you're going to figure it out, eventually you will. And it might cause some annoyances in the short term. But I kind of think that things like this are also kind of a huge opportunity for people who are just getting started. Because when big changes happen, it's affecting everyone. It's affecting the big players, the big experienced players. It's affecting the little guys. Everyone, in a way, is kind of starting from the same playing field. It kind of levels the playing field when things like this happen. So if you kind of take that position and you're, you know, like actually have some sort of like grit and drive and can figure things out on your own, you know, I think that things like this can actually be a good thing for you.
When you first heard the news of the update, though, you were considering going back to college and going that route. Is that right?
I can't say that crossed my mind.
Okay.
Can't say it did.
Yeah, yeah. So Nate's got the right response here. Like, stuff like this, it affects everyone. It's like, well, what are we going to do? Quit? No, so let's adjust. And whoever can adapt the quickest does ultimately benefit from it. So it'll ultimately do have to be better. But you're getting about 70% of your purchases actually counting in Facebook ads. Is that right?
Yeah, 60 to 70%.
And is there any way to like manually bring that data over? Have you found, like, can you use like the emails from purchases or something?
You can do UTM tracking, which I think is probably the most like guaranteed way of it working, but it's also just like hugely, it's just like really annoying and difficult to kind of organize all the data in one place so that you can actually like draw actionable conclusions from it. So I think for kind of right now, like, we're just kind of dealing with it. I don't think we've made any sort of huge, any huge changes to the way that we're doing things. We're just kind of doing our best with it. And I'm sure that it's causing us to make some, you know, decisions that might not be ideal in terms of, you know, what campaigns or ad sets that we kill, what campaigns or ad sets that we, you know, keep running or scale or whatever. But that's just part of the game, man. It's part of the game. And ultimately, like, that's why I always kind of fall back on the fundamentals, because if we have everything else dialed in, if we have, you know, a great offer, if our marketing is on point, you know, our messaging really resonates with our audience and we have, you know, solid ads, then yeah, all that stuff, it becomes less important. You don't really have to worry about too much if you're just doing all the big, simple things correctly.
So if anything, like, the simple answer to your response is that you maybe let ads run a little bit longer than you normally would before cutting them?
Yeah. I'd say that's probably a decent conclusion. We do a little bit. To be honest, like, I don't even know if I'm the best person to be asking about this, because I don't run the ads personally. You know, for our brand, we have a guy on our team who does that. You know, that's his full time gig. So he would probably know more on that topic than I would. But you know, based off what I know, that's the gist.
I found that hiring someone that you trust to run your ads, that can actually do it and actually care about your company enough to learn the ins and outs and to really dive into the mindset of your customer and to do everything they need to, is hard to come by. A lot of Facebook ads experts are only Facebook ads experts, not copywriters and marketers, and don't understand the back end that happens after, which makes the whole thing not really work. They kind of just put together some generic ads for people, but they're not really going to be profitable. So how did you find someone to hire for the ads here? Sounds like he's on your actual team and he doesn't run ads for anyone else. Have you tried to hire agencies as well and have any experience with that?
Not really. So, I mean, at this point in our business, like, we're pretty averse to working with agencies for just about anything. For 90% of things, we would much rather, you know, have someone in-house doing it, just because that's what we found to be better. You know, with an agency, whoever's running that agency, they have two goals. Their goal is to make you money, but ultimately their number one goal is to make themselves money. And those are two very different things. You know, what they got to do to make themselves money is they got to go out and get more clients. That is a totally different thing from running my ads, from being involved in my business and, you know, doing everything that goes along with that. I've used an agency in the past. I hesitate to call it an agency because it wasn't really an agency. It was just like two guys that I met on Twitter. You know, I guess it was an agency, but they were a smaller agency and I became one of their, you know, kind of like their main client, and they kind of became partners in the business with my first store back in 2018. And they ran my ads and they were really good. I'm super tight with them still to this day. I don't do any work with them currently, but they're super great guys. I actually just talked to one of them like 2 days ago. And so that worked out. But the way that we found our current guy is, I mean, it's basically just been, this is for pretty much like most people on our team, it's been through, you know, our business Blue Ocean E-commerce. So Blue Ocean E-commerce is like, you know, that kind of entails like my personal brand. You know, the courses that we sell are e-com dispensary membership group and all that kind of stuff. Like, that's how we found just about everyone that's on our team. it's people who have, you know, bought our courses, who have consumed, you know, the content that I put out on Twitter and on YouTube, who are on the email list, and people who just kind of found us that way. And yeah, I mean, that's kind of been like one of the biggest blessings, besides like the actual monetary value of, you know, of everything, you know, that I've done with my personal brand and everything. It's introduced us to just an immense amount of high quality people. And that's how we found just about everyone. They've either been someone who's watched content, someone who, you know, was a student of ours, who was doing something, you know, within our sphere. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
They're already pretty much trained by the time they are hired, because they've already gone through all the course material. One of the benefits of selling courses, you can kind of just hire people like, here's your training. You have to buy it, though.
It's been really cool because when we do it like that, the people that are coming in have so much more context for not only what we do and like what's important, what skills are important, and, you know, what are the right things to be doing, but also they know us. Like, they know a lot about me, probably. They know a decent amount about Scotty. And it's been really good doing things that way. Like, the most recent person that we just brought on is, I guess he's kind of like an intern. He just graduated high school, and he was a member of our e-com dispensary group. And we just put in, you know, in the group one time, we were just like, hey, you know, we might be looking to bring someone on if you, you know, think you might fit this bill. And we listed, you know, whatever the criteria were, then, you know, shoot Scotty an email. And I'm sure he got a bunch of emails, and then it ended up just working out with this one dude. And he's been, he's actually been running Snapchat ads for us. So it's been working out pretty well.
And the Snapchat ads, is that just for cold ads?
We've been doing both. We've been doing cold and retargeting.
There's a Snapchat pixel.
There's something, man. There's definitely something. I honestly, like, no idea in terms of technically how that works, but there's definitely something on there.
So what do you do? Like, I know you're so paid ad based, with all these e-commerce brands that you have these, you got the Instagram account set up though, at least. So it looks like there's a company that's running the ads to them. Like, how much organic posting do you do? And that's something I'm guessing you hire out completely. But tell us a little bit about the strategy of what does your organic posting and page need to look like in order for the ads to work?
That's a good question. So I'm pulling up our brand's Instagram page now. Let's see. The last time we posted was February 14th. So that was like 4 months ago.
Did you just say Happy Valentine's Day?
I don't know. Let's see. No, it actually wasn't even related to Valentine's Day at all. That's funny. We just have, I think, I mean, it looks like right now just about no one is doing anything in terms of our Instagram page. We had someone on our team. I think we had our sourcing guy who was, posting on our Instagram page for a while. Maybe it was one of our VAs. I don't remember exactly. But I think like in terms of like what you need in terms of like an Instagram page, it's like you basically need nothing. Like, you don't even need an Instagram page to run ads on Facebook, to run ads on Instagram, because Instagram's owned by Facebook. So you don't even have to have an Instagram page. You literally just have to have a Facebook page. I think an Instagram page is good, but unless you've done at least $100,000 in revenue, I don't think it's something to even be thinking about. If you're doing things the way that I do things with, you know, focusing on Facebook ads and paid traffic, I don't think there's really been a whole lot of benefit to, you know, I mean, our Instagram page has like 5,000 followers, but no one
that have come from paid ads mostly.
Yeah, I mean, that's come entirely from paid ads. Like, we haven't tried to grow the page or done anything on there. Most of our ads are on Facebook versus Instagram, so we don't get a whole lot of traffic from Instagram, I don't think. So that's probably why there's not that many followers on there. But I don't think it's important at all, really, unless your product is like very Instagram based, which is like usually tends to be for a younger audience and more like kind of like cool, like trendy type products, or maybe something that's more, I don't know, more like branded, if that makes sense. If Instagram is a key part of like your advertising, then I think it makes sense. But if you're just doing things like direct response marketing, Facebook ads, I don't think it matters really at all.
What about if someone has like, they're brand new, like the average business owner when they're brand new is very shy to spend money on literally anything, right? what is this still your strategy? If someone's like, hey, I got to quit my 9 to 5. I want to get into e-commerce. I've never been in sales before. I've never done any kind of business before. The job that they had before was still completely unrelated. Is the first step still going to be pick a product, set it up on Shopify, run ads? They're still going to go through the same process? Or does anyone go through like some organic posting or something like that to get their feet wet and to kind of figure out their market a little bit more?
Yeah. I mean, I think I did that for a little while when I was first starting, because yeah, same situation. Like I didn't have a lot of money. I mean, I barely had any money, you know, to spend on ads. So I was like, maybe I can do this organically. And the thing about doing anything organically, like building a business around, is it takes a lot of time. It's very time intensive. You don't have to spend money, but you have to spend time. And, you know, at the end of the day, those are the two things. You can't get away from that. If you want to build a business, you have to either spend a lot of money or a lot of time. The thing about if you're doing it organically, because it takes a lot of time, it's going to take you a really long time to figure out if what you're doing is just not going to work. If you've been doing something that's just a waste of time, you could spend 6 months to a year trying to build an organic social media presence for whatever that is and not get any results, and then only figure it out then. The reason that paid traffic is so good for e-com is because it allows you to figure out if your ideas are good or not within a couple days. You can figure that out instantly. And I think one of the most important things when you're first starting out is you have to fail, and you have to fail fast. If you are failing slowly, it's going to take you forever. Like, most people do not become successful their first, second, third, fourth, fifth try doing something in business. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of you know, different attempts and different things that you have to try. And if you're doing things organically, then it's going to take a really long time. It could be 5 years before you figure out that your fifth idea doesn't work. And I mean, if that's what you want to do, fine, I'm not going to stop you, but I don't think that's a smart way to go about running a business. So if you're someone who is averse to spending money on paid ads to, you know, to test your ideas, to do e-commerce, then I would say don't do e-commerce. Like, do what I did. Do freelance copywriting first. Do some sort of freelance marketing where you're providing, instead of selling a product, you're selling a service. You're selling your time, providing some sort of a valuable skill, some sort of a service to a business that is going to benefit from that. So again, for me, what I did was I wrote emails. I wrote marketing emails for businesses. I learned the skill of being able to, you know, write copy that is persuasive and to some extent. And I was able to get, you know, it's the most simple business model of all time. It's you learn a skill that is ideally something related to marketing or sales or something that is going to directly help a business make more money. And then you go and you do a bunch of cold outreach, you send cold emails, you cold call, you do whatever it is that you can to reach out to a bunch of companies. You offer them your skill in exchange for however much money a month or a percentage, or you can work for free when you're first starting out if you just want to kind of get some experience and just kind of figure things out. Do that, use that as a way to build up the money that you need to be able to spend money on paid ads. And then
the skill set too.
Exactly. Yeah. And that those are really the two main things that you need, in my opinion, to be successful in e-commerce. Is you need the skill set and you need the money. E-commerce is not free. You're not going to get into this. Like, there's so many videos, and this is something I was talking about yesterday before we started recording, when I was telling you about how I got interviewed yesterday. One of the questions that this dude asked me was like, what's the thing that, I think it was something along the lines of like, what's the thing that you see people in like the e-commerce space talking about that you just think is like completely wrong, that pisses you off a lot? And the thing that really just like gets under my skin so much is all these people talking about how you can start e-com, you can start drop shipping for like $50 or like $100. And like, is it physically possible? Like, it is. It's not like by the laws of physics impossible. But it's extremely unlikely that you're going to be able to build a successful business in the e-commerce space with $50, $100, with anything less than at least like $1,000, I would say. So if you're in the position where you don't have that money, you know, I was in that position. I know exactly what that's like. And that's why I started doing freelancing first, is because it's 100% free to start. There's absolutely zero cost. You don't need a website. You basically, all you need is internet and an email address. And you need some way to learn a valuable skill. You know, and that doesn't have to cost any money. You can do that for free. It's pretty much what I did. Like, I didn't have money to pay for courses. I didn't have money to, you know, do really much of anything. I used Google, and I, you know, read books, and I bought books when I could. And, you know, I think that's really like the main route that makes the most sense, because everyone wants to do e-com because it's like this, it's a sexy business. Like, you know, we've been talking on this call for however long. And, you know, meanwhile, my brand's been making sales and it's just, you know, it's on autopilot, right? Like I don't necessarily have to be working in order to make money. The thing with that is to get to that stage, I think you kind of got to pay your dues a little bit. You have to learn the skill sets and you have to build up some sort of capital to be able to do that. And then even then, it's not even a guarantee. I mean, it's by no means a guarantee. It's probably going to take you 6 months or more to get anything, you know, somewhat close to working. So that's kind of the route that I would recommend is kind of like, you know, what's the first thing is like kind of back to what I was saying earlier, it's learn that skill of direct response marketing and then go out and find a way to offer that skill to businesses. So there's a lot of ways to do that, you know, and it doesn't necessarily have to be that skill. If you already have an existing skill, like say you're really into photography or you're really into video editing or, you know, something graphic design, you know, these are things that businesses need, right? And you can go out and you can get clients and you can charge these clients X amount per month to, you know, for you to provide these services to them. And that's really what I think makes the most sense for 99% of people starting out, because e-commerce has so many moving parts and it's a really easy way to lose a lot of money very quickly, especially if you're going hard on paid ads. So I'd say if you're averse to spending money, if you don't have that money, if you don't want to, you know, start with paid traffic, then don't. But I probably wouldn't recommend e-commerce as the route to go. I'd probably recommend freelancing, some sort of freelance marketing or something along those lines.
Because when you go into running a business, then every skill set is required right from the beginning to make it work. You have to, you know, like all of them, and I'm not even going to list them. But if you can at least come into it with a foundational skill set or two that you're really good at, then especially in the marketing realm, you actually have a chance to make it within those first couple of business ideas. But like just even that example you gave with like you need at least $1,000, it's like $1,000 and your first marketing guess worked. And your first product guess, and it's like you don't really have enough room for failure. So it's mostly just a mindset of like, I'm just going to do it until it works from the beginning. Would you agree?
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there was a day in my life when I decided that like I was going to make it work no matter what. And that was like probably the most, you know, most impactful day of my young life. When I decided that, like, it was just, there was no question. It was like, something was going to work. I didn't know what it was going to be, but I knew something was going to work and I wasn't going to stop until it did. And if you have that mindset, it's not easy, man. Like, it's going to be tough. You're probably going to fail a bunch of times and it's going to be frustrating. But the kind of mindset that I always try to instill in people when they ask me about, you know, online business and stuff is just like, if you spend 2 hours a day, every single day for the next 3 years, just doing something, trying to progress yourself in building a business online. If you do that, it's going to be really difficult to not find something that works, to not make some sort of money. Most people just don't have the, you know, the grit and the ability to do something for so long without seeing any sort of results. And that's why like being able to delay gratification and being able to work on something, even though there's no guarantee that you're going to get paid from it, that it's going to work out. If you can do that for a long enough time, your success is almost guaranteed, like as long as you're not a complete idiot. But it's tough.
Agreed.
You know, you put in perspective, like people go to college for 4 years for a job. I mean, these days going to college and getting a degree is certainly not a guarantee that you're going to get a job. But people have no trouble doing that. So what's stopping you from doing 4 years of this? And I mean, it's honestly like it can be a lot less work than college is over the course of 4 years too.
It reminds me of this time I was at a sales conference and like one of the top sales reps, like people asked like, what's your schedule? And he's like, I work 9 to 5. So that's not the schedule I would choose. But like in sales, like we did have complete control. And he's like, I just work 9 to 5. Like he's just working 40 hours a week. And it's just like, if you literally even just work those same hours on e-commerce, you're probably going to figure it out. And like 8 hours a day, 5 days in a row, you're going to figure something out eventually.
It out in a matter of a couple months, I think. Like if you were putting in 8 hours of focused work a day into e-commerce, into any sort of online business venture, you would probably figure it out. But you know, people, I think for the most part, they don't have like a real solid sense of like self-awareness, and they don't realize how little work they're actually doing. And when you decide, like that's when everything changed for me, because there was a long period where I was just kind of like twiddling my thumbs. I had all these ideas in my head about things I wanted to do, and I would like mock them up in Photoshop, and I would come up with all these business plans and stuff, but I never actually like did anything. And then all of a sudden, when I actually started, like when I made that decision that something was going to work no matter what, I mean, it didn't take that long. It really didn't.
For you to start on the business decision, you're saying? Like, once you decided that you're going to do it, it didn't take you long to start?
No, well, I mean, from the time that I decided that something was going to work to the time that I was, you know, like, free, the time that I could support myself in full from, you know, from my online businesses and didn't have to work a job, didn't have to answer anyone, could just live my life however I wanted to. I mean, it was a matter of months. Like, it was crazy, man. I mean, it was less than a year.
And it's really insane that you did it at your age. Like, I know you probably hear stuff like that all the time of like people complimenting like what you do based on your age too. I don't know if it gets annoying after a while, but most people can't figure it out. And that, well, I think like if they dropped out of college and then started their journey there versus go all the way through college and then started it after, then that's kind of part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think?
Yeah. I mean, dude, it's crazy because like my business partner Scotty is 2 years younger than me. He's been doing this stuff since he was like 15 or 16. He's been doing it way longer than I have. And there's so many other dudes who are younger than me. Like, you know, it doesn't really matter how old you are. That's the cool thing about all this stuff is like being 17 versus being 25. There's no advantage of being 25 versus 17 when it comes to all this online business stuff. If anything, it's the 17-year-old might even have an advantage. So, you know, I don't really think it comes down to, I don't think your age is all that important. I mean, I've we've had students who are 17, we've had students who are 55. Like it's something that not everyone can do, but it's something that just about anyone can do.
Anyone can do it like skill set wise, like they can learn the skills and figure it out eventually, but not everyone has the mentality to go through all of that stuff. Let me ask you then, wrapping up here, I feel like every entrepreneur has like their superpower, right? Like what, like the thing that has just kind of come naturally to them or whatever. What would you define your superpower as?
That's a tough one. I mean, I don't know if I have any superpowers, man. I think like the superpower is just showing up every day. I have the superpower of every single day minus maybe, I mean, I could probably count on, you know, maybe more than two hands. Maybe I need four hands or five hands or something to count how many days that I have in the last 3 years not shown up to this very desk that I'm sitting in right now and worked on my business. I've done it every day for a long period of time. And like, it's, you know, as cliche as it is, like that's the superpower. Like consistency is the ultimate superpower. I think I'm also like, I'm somewhat gifted with writing. I've always been good at writing since I was a kid. I think that's why copywriting was kind of like a natural thing for me. But dude, besides that, it's just like, just showing up, understanding how people work, you know, human nature, that's another big thing. But I mean, I think the biggest thing is just showing up every day.
You don't seem to question yourself much either too, or like what, you don't question what you're doing or your path and stuff. You're just showing up to work every day.
Yeah. I mean, there definitely are moments where I do question, you know, what I'm doing. And I don't know. I feel like sometimes
but from a lens like, of should I adjust my business plan rather than like, am I cut out for this?
Right. Yeah. I mean, at this point, I've been doing it long enough where it's not even like a question of like, am I cut out for this?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, this is just what I do. Like, it'd be like, you know, am I cut out to brush my teeth in the morning? Like, you wouldn't ask yourself that because you do it, you know? And so that's kind of what it's like for me at this point. But yeah, I mean, it definitely wasn't always that. And it took a while to get to that point. But that's the cool thing about doing something for a long period of time. It's like the longer you do it, the more normal it gets and the more integrated it becomes into who you are as a person. And then all of a sudden, it's just who you are. It's what your life is.
Well, lots of great stuff from you, man. Stay for a second after I wrap up and say goodbye to the podcast audience here. But before I let you go, where can people find you?
Sorry, I just accidentally turned on your podcast in the background. Yeah, where can people find me? So I'm on Twitter. Twitter's probably my main social media platform. You can find me there at Schmidt. And my handle is SCHM7DT. It's my last name with a 7 for the I. And if you're just in e-com, if you want to learn more about this stuff, then I guess the best place that we're, like, me and my partner Scotty are putting out content on a weekly basis is in our e-com dispensary group. I used to make a lot of YouTube videos. I don't really make a whole lot of YouTube videos anymore. I used to tweet a lot. I used to send out a lot of emails. I don't really do a whole lot of that anymore. Most of the content that that I'm making these days is going inside of our membership group. So if you want to check that out, the link for that is ecomdispensary.com.
Hell yeah. Well, thanks so much, man. We'll talk to you soon. Hope you guys enjoyed that interview. If you did, leave a review, subscribe to the podcast. Why don't you? You can always unsubscribe later, but we got more fire like this coming out week after week. Coming next week, I got episode 150 of this show, and I always try to do something special. So I am pulling from my list of podcast episodes right now, and I'm going to come out what I feel like is the best, most impactful, and, you know, a little more special of an episode than the average how to hashtag episode or something of the sort. So be sure to subscribe and get here back next week. If you want some entrepreneur advice that's actually going to do something for you, it might not be the most sugar-coated advice next week, but I'm not going to be a dick. You know, I don't like it way too ranty. At least I don't think so. And it's going to be some good shit. So hope to see you back here next week, and have a great day.